Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to C3 Online and the conclusion of our series, Underdogs. Hey, if we haven't had a chance to meet, my name is Russ. I get the honor of helping lead our student ministries here at C3, and I am so excited to be able to join you today. I want to take a special moment before I jump into my message to say a special thank you and to give honor and credit where they are due to Pastor Mark, as well as our entire senior leadership team, all of our staff. Listen, you may not understand this, but I want you to get this perspective that we are blessed, man. Not every church is as blessed as we are, but we have an amazing leader at the helm. We've got an amazing leadership team that across kids and tech and so many other areas, they are helping to continue to make ministry happen, even in times like what we find ourselves in. So can you do me a favor, just for like the next 5 seconds, can you drop, if you've got a chance to do some clapping emojis in the chat or some thank yous in the chat, can you just show some love for Pastor Mark, our senior leadership team, our staff? Come on, give them some honor where honor is due, man. So excited to be with you today. And I gotta be honest, when Pastor Mark asked me a number of months ago to be a part of this series, I was first and foremost very honored and very humbled. Secondly, I was very terrified, if I'm being honest. And thirdly, I was incredibly excited because I think, man, who does not love a good underdog story? I think about classic underdog stories from history and pop culture. Things like Coach Boone and his team of high school football players in Remember the Titans. I think about Rocky or Rudy or my personal favorite, The Karate Kid, right? Those are some amazing underdog stories. I think about people in history like Walt Disney, who early on was basically told, and it was said about him, that he wasn't very creative and he didn't have any good ideas. And now, obviously, we know the name Disney very, very well. I think about somebody like Albert Einstein, who, as he was growing up and in classical education, people thought that he was kind of dumb because he didn't learn in the normal classical learning environments that we're so used to. But obviously now we look back and he's one of the smartest men in all of history, or even an underdog like Michael Jordan. When you think Michael Jordan, you might not think of an underdog, but what you may not know is that Michael very early on was cut from his high school basketball team, and he had to work and fight to get every opportunity that he had, and now, obviously, he is arguably the greatest basketball player of all time. Those are some of the classic underdogs in our history, and to be honest, there's a lot of popular stories in the Bible as well that we could look at. A lot of popular stories that many of us know very well. David and Goliath, Daniel in the lion's den. I could go on and on. But what I love about the Bible is that the Bible is far from boring. And there are a number of stories, well-known and not as well-known, that we can learn from and be inspired by as we talk about this idea of underdogs. So today we're going to jump into one of my favorite stories in the Bible. It's found in 2 Kings chapter 6. And it's about this guy named Elisha. And I'll talk more about him in a second, but it's also about Elisha's servant, who plays a very important role in this story. And this story may be super familiar to some, maybe a little foreign to other people. Maybe you're here today and you're just honestly jumping on this stream to check out church, God, the Bible. Maybe you don't have any kind of church background. Maybe you don't even know right now where you see yourself in relation to Christianity or to God. We just want you to know that you are a guest of honor in this house. And whether this story is super familiar to you or this is your first time hearing this story, I believe that, man, there are some powerful truths that we can learn from it today. And so buckle up because we're going to have some fun today. So here's the thing. If you're not real familiar with Elisha, I want to give you a little bit of context on him. Elisha was a guy that was known as a prophet, meaning that especially back in the Old Testament times, before Jesus came on the scene, Elisha would hear from God, and then he was called to then take whatever God spoke to him and take it to the masses, to take it to a larger audience. That's really kind of the responsibility that Elisha had, and we see that happening here in 2 Kings chapter 6. And here's what it says, starting in verse number 8. It says, "Now the king of Aram was at war with Israel. After conferring with his officers, he said, 'I will set up my camp in such and such a place.' And the man of God sent word to the king of Israel, beware of passing that place because the Arameans are going down there. So the king of Israel checked on the place indicated by the man of God. Time and time again, Elisha warned the king so that he was on his guard in such places. This enraged the king of Aram. He summoned his officers and demanded of them, tell me, which of us is on the side of the king of Israel? AKA, there's a mole in my camp. Somebody's telling them what's going on. And I love this response. They say this, none of us, my lord the king. But Elisha, the prophet who is in Israel, tells the king of Israel the very words you speak in your bedroom. Go, find out where he is, the king ordered, so I can send men and capture him. The report came back that he is in Dothan. So then he, the king, sent horses and chariots and a strong force there. They went by night and surrounded the city. And when the servant of the man of God got up and went out early the next morning, an army with horses and chariots had surrounded the city. Oh no, my lord, what shall we do? The servant asked. And with this story in mind, today I want to entitle this talk simply this, Surrounded and Surrendered. Surrounded and Surrendered. I shared with you a moment ago a lot of very famous stories from history and pop culture about a ton of amazing underdogs. When I think about my own life and the underdog stories that I've lived out, there are some that are very serious that if you know my story, you would know some of that background, and I'd be happy to share it with you anytime. But there are some stories that are more serious. There are other stories that, honestly, they're just real. They're just real life, honest experiences that I've had. The one that I think about the most in this context especially is I think about the fact that, if you didn't know, I have a young son named Corbin. He's almost 4 years old. He's like the most amazing little boy on the planet. And Corbin is high energy, loves people, and does not know how to hit the brakes sometimes and to just take a break. So growing up in Dallas and having my family in Dallas for a long time up until we moved up to Washington, there are these places in Dallas, these gifts from God called Chick-fil-A. And a lot of people maybe don't understand like how good Chick-fil-A really is. I'm just letting you know this. I am praying and believing God for there to be a Chick-fil-A that comes to the Tri-Cities. Now, we'll see when that promise comes to pass, but I'm just going to go ahead and say it, right? I'm just going to go ahead and pray like it's coming. But what a lot of people don't really know about Chick-fil-A is that, man, they are one of the only fast food places that in today's day and age, they are so good about having an awesome play place for the kids, and they keep it really clean and sanitary. So obviously, because of that, it is extremely popular. Now, here's the fun part about my son. Anytime we would say we were going to Chick-fil-A, or anytime we pulled up to that restaurant and he could recognize the logo and the building and all of that, you better believe homeboy immediately made a beeline to that play place. We're trying to order food and hold him back and keep him from running into that play place. And once we finally get our food ordered, typically I would be the one to kind of go hang out with him in the play place or let him in there. And I'm telling you what, man, seriously, shoes are coming off, socks are coming off. If there was any like expendable article of clothing on him, it was coming off. It created some problems for us a little bit early on. But you get into the play place and again, they're so well known for this that I just got to tell you, if the restaurant's open, there are kids in there. And typically we're not talking about like one kid, two kids. No, it's like a dozen more. It's like a ton. And so we would go into the play place and my son would be screaming and having fun and playing and climbing. And it was great. It was so much fun. The problem for me was that there were also about a dozen or more other kids that were screaming and playing and climbing and having all kinds of fun. And I'd be sitting in there going, dear Lord, get me out of here, right? This is what shows me that I'm not cut out to be a kids pastor, just being real. And I'm so thankful for people like Jackie, who does an amazing job directing our kids ministry so that I don't have to. But even after, you know, my son would be, you know, playing in there, the food would arrive, and if you can believe it, the underdog story, the uphill battle, does not stop at simply having him in the play place. Because if you have kids, or if you've, you know, had kids that are younger, you know that realistically, typically one of the things that happens is the food comes, and you're like, okay, bud, time for us to go, food's here, and you get the response of, I'm not hungry, I just want to keep playing. And at some point you're like, ha ha, that's cute. But eventually you're like, boy, it is time for us to go eat. And so just as quickly as the shoes and socks came off, sometimes some other articles of clothing, again, he's an awesome kid, just really excited, right? But as quickly as that stuff would come off is how quickly he would finally run out of the play place without putting back on his socks or his shoes. And they are notorious as well for having hand sanitizer right outside the room. And so most of the time I'm like, dear Lord, please. I'm taking like 12 pumps of that stuff, which, you know, that's about $20 right there in today's day and age. And I'm going, please just put this on your hands, put this everywhere, right? And then we would go eat our food. I think that there's something very real and honest about this experience that we can all kind of navigate together and understand together, because there is something very real and terrifying about feeling completely surrounded, completely outnumbered, and completely overwhelmed. And that's where we find Elisha's servant in this story. And I want to encourage you today with something that I think Elisha probably would have encouraged his servant with, which is simply this idea that, oh no, is okay. Oh no, is okay. For Elisha's servant, it was, oh no, we're surrounded on all sides. For me, it was, oh no, I'm surrounded by kids in this play place and I just want to get out of here. But for all of us, we've probably had a moment where we said, oh no. Now, there are people out there that honestly, you may be persuaded to feel towards this servant something like this. Come on, dude, just buck up. Like, just go handle your business. Man up. And I get that. But let's think about the context of this story and this servant's experience. He had done everything right. He had listened to the orders of his superior. He had served Elisha, the man of God, so very well. And yet he still ended up in this circumstance and in this situation. He still ended up even doing everything right, everything he had been told to do. He was surrounded on all sides by enemy armies, by enemy forces. And I think we've all probably been there at some point, if not right now. How many of us at some point over the last 2+ months have had a moment where we said, oh no. Come on, parents. You cannot sit here and tell me that when you found out that schools were going to be closed for the entire rest of the school year that you did not say, oh no. And to be honest, whether you are surrounded by kids in a play place, maybe that's not you. That was definitely me. You may not be surrounded by enemy forces on all sides like Elisha's servant, but maybe today you're surrounded by bills that just keep piling up and you don't have enough money to pay for them. Maybe today you're surrounded by reminders of being laid off or being furloughed. Maybe you're surrounded right now by reminders of a bad health diagnosis for you or a loved one, and that's got you saying, oh no. Maybe you're surrounded today by reminders of a broken marriage or a broken relationship with your kids, and that's got you saying, oh no. We're all surrounded by something at some point. But can I tell you, oh no is okay. That's what I believe Elisha knew in this moment for this servant. But I also believe that Elisha knew that he also had to get the servant to this point. And this is a phrase that I've heard hundreds of times. It's not an original thought on my end, but I think it very much applies to the situation we find ourselves in. That no matter what you're surrounded by something at some point. And this idea is simply this. It's okay to not be okay, but it's not okay to stay that way. Elisha knew he had to get the servant to this point where he could say, oh no, I'm surrounded. I'm in trouble. What do I do? But he had to move on at some point. And that's what I love about how this story continues. How do we get past the oh no? How do we not stay stuck that way? Here's what happens in Elisha's story and in the story of this servant. In 2 Kings chapter 6, verse 16, it tells us this, that Elisha looked at his servant and said this, do not be afraid. He says this then, those who are with us are more than those who are with them. Now, you got to realize, think about this for a second. The servant is probably sitting there hearing this out of Elisha's mouth, and he's probably looking around going, where they at? Right? He's going, are you sure about this? But Elisha was so sure because he knew that there was something going on beyond the physical eyes and what they could see. Elisha believed better. He knew God's character. He knew that God had a really good reputation for coming through in moments like this. And I love what happens next in verse 17. It says this, that then Elisha prayed, O Lord, open his eyes and let him see. And the Lord opened the young man's eyes. And when he looked up, he saw that the hillside around Elisha was filled with horses and chariots of fire. This is God's actual army, God's power and presence that is right there surrounding Elisha and his servant the entire time. So when the servant was saying, oh no, and he was not okay, Elisha knew, hey, it's okay to not be okay, but it's not okay to stay that way. And he stepped in and had a faith that was bigger than the servant's fear. Elisha knew what the servant needed to know and what you and I need to know, which is simply this, that fear's greatest fear is faith. Fear actually will be afraid of moments when someone who trusts in the character of God can stand up in their face and say, you don't own me anymore. You don't control me because I got a God on my side who is bigger than what I see around me. Now, let me just clarify. I am in no way saying that faith gets rid of fear. I'm in no way saying that faith just magically takes the fear away. But what it does do is faith gives you the strength to fight back against that fear, to be able to stand up to it and say, again, you don't own me. You don't control me. You don't run my life. You don't get to dictate my story because I've got somebody on my side who's got forces that are with me and there are more than me than those who are against me. Elisha knew that fear's greatest fear is faith. And this servant was relatively new to serving Elisha. He had probably heard some stories about what Elisha could do with God on his side, but he was probably relatively unfamiliar other than that. He had not been with Elisha long enough to see a ton of miracles happen. And Elisha in this moment saw the exact same thing with his physical eyes that the servant was seeing. But Elisha, again, knew God's character. He knew God's reputation. He knew God's power. And so he recognized and knew that there was something going on beyond the physical eyes. Elisha chose to remember that up until this point, God had already put water into a desert. God had already put a baby into a barren womb. God had already put oil, an endless supply of oil, inside of a widow's jars so that she could provide for her family. God had already brought a boy back to life that was dead. God had already restored and healed a man of a skin disease that would have caused him to be an outcast of society. Elisha had experienced all of that firsthand. So an army surrounding him on all sides, while it may have been scary to his physical eyes, he knew better inside of his spirit. He knew better inside of his heart. And the servant needed someone who had that kind of faith. The servant needed someone who would just stop, say, hey, listen, I understand that what you see right now is scary, but don't be afraid. And then what did Elisha do? Elisha prayed. Isn't that amazing? I want to ask you maybe kind of a deeply personal question. Do you have somebody in your life right now that can be that for you? That can simply say, stop, don't be scared, and pray for you? If you don't have that person, then I want to simply encourage you that we want to help you find that person. Whether it's through our small groups, whether it's through counseling, whether it's through the various ministries of our church, we believe that life was not meant to be done alone, that you deserve to have some amazing people in your corner. That's what Elisha's servant needed. That's what you need. And God forbid that the reason you give up or tap out early be because you felt like you didn't have anybody in your corner. We believe wholeheartedly that you deserve that. That's what Elisha's servant needed. That's what we all need. Is people that when life is hitting us on all sides and the stresses of life are coming against us, that we can have people that just simply say, stop, it's going to be okay, and pray. And have faith that is bigger than our fears. Because again, fear's greatest fear is faith. Elisha made the right decision here. His response was first and foremost to turn a situation that seemed out of control over to a God who was fully in control. And he did that through this powerful thing called prayer, which is really honestly just talking to God about the situations that are in front of you. And Elisha knew in this moment again what you and I need to know, which is simply this, that prayer is the first response, not the last resort. Come on, I mean, think about that. In times of trouble, in times of fear, the people of God should first and foremost be able to turn themselves over to prayer, to talking to God about the situations that we find ourselves surrounded by. Nobody can look at what's going on in our world right now, the things that surround us, and act like we have it all figured out or that we act like we have it all under control. But we can have an audience at any point in time with the God who is fully in control. That's what prayer is. And it should be our first response, not our last resort. The God who is all-knowing and all-powerful, the God who can do exceedingly and abundantly more than we could ever ask or imagine on our own, we can have an audience with him at any time. That's what prayer is. Whether you've known God for 5 seconds or for 50 years or more, you can have a conversation with him. You can talk to him honestly about what's going on in your life and in your world. For many of us, maybe we just don't understand, or maybe we've never believed in the priority of prayer. Let me just put it to you in this context. You at any point in time, because of what Jesus Christ did for you on the cross, the fact that he came and died for your sins so that you could be connected to God forever, now and in eternity, because of that, you can have an audience with the creator of the universe anytime you want, at all times. This is an amazing thing to think about. He's a God who's more in love with you than you could ever imagine. When you speak to him, he listens. When you call, he answers. When you weep, he weeps. When you mourn, he mourns. He's a God that's there for you at all times. He's an ever-present help in time of need. That's the audience that you can have at any time by simply turning your focus away from what you see with your physical eyes and instead turning your focus to the God who is right there with you in your circumstance. One of my mentors, she has this saying that I love, and it's something to the essence of this, that short prayers reach the throne when you don't live very far. Which essentially would mean this, that when you're spending time with God very consistently, when you stay close to God's heart, guess what? You don't have to pray prayers that are real deep or real long or real wordy. Think about it. Elisha didn't pray anything that was like theologically deep. He didn't use any big fancy words. All he said was, Lord, open his eyes that he may see. And boom, just like that, God answered his prayer. Short prayers reach the throne when you don't live very far. It's like, I think about it this way. This is one of productivity's best friends, my AirPods, especially in this season, right? And the thing I love about these ones in particular is they have a noise canceling feature. So at any time, I can put these in my ears and I can hold down this little guy just like this. And all of a sudden, the noise of the world around me is completely quieted. And it is a blessing in most seasons, whether I'm in the gym, whether I'm at home and I'm needing to work on stuff, whether I'm at the office, when, you know, the doors are open, right? These things are a blessing in those moments. But they're not so much of a blessing when the case is not charged and therefore the AirPods themselves are not charged. And there have been so many times when I needed that sweet, sweet power and that sweet, sweet release of some noise cancellation and my AirPods failed me because I failed to plug them into a real power source. Friend, can I tell you something? You gotta stop trying to fight these battles on your own on a limited supply of power. You gotta stop trying to have all of the answers to all of the questions and all of the fears without plugging yourself into something that's gonna give you a limitless supply of strength and knowledge and power and peace. You have the ability to do that. You have the ability to plug into a power source greater than you can imagine that is gonna sustain you and strengthen you in the face of any fear. You have the opportunity to do that by simply praying like Elisha prayed, by simply talking to God. And some may say, I got too much going on in my life to take time to pray. Can I be honest with you? You got too much going on in your life to not take time to pray. Nobody can look at our world right now and be calm about it. Let's be honest, on our own efforts, in our own merit. Again, whether you're surrounded by bills or reminders of a layoff or stress in the home or stress with friendships, we've all got stuff going on where there are none of us that can say, hey, you know what? I got it all figured out on my own. Nobody has this thing figured out on their own. You don't have time to not pray because you need to plug yourself into a limitless supply. That you gotta be able to look at your circumstances and say, hey, you know what? I'm not gonna let my circumstances tell me what is true. I'm gonna start telling my circumstances what is true. I'm gonna plug into a limitless supply that's gonna give me all I need in the face of great adversity. Because greater is he that is in me than he that is in the world. I have a God that when I ask something of him in accordance with his will, he hears me and he answers me. It may not be in my time, it may not be the way that I want him to, but he is gonna answer that prayer. He's the God that supplies all of my needs through Christ Jesus. I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. I can plug into that power supply at any time. And it starts with a simple conversation of letting prayer be the first response and not the last resort. Whew. I wish y'all were here with me right now. We'd be having church, man. Oh, man. You know what's amazing, though? Is this isn't how the story ends. We could kind of assume that we know how the story would go. If you're not familiar with this story, the assumption would be that, you know, God brings the smackdown on this Aramean army and, you know, and then, you know, Elisha and the servant are just free and they walk off and, you know, all the guys are just gone and done. But that's actually not what happens because God had a much bigger plan all along. God truly exceeds expectations here. And I love this because starting in verse 18, here's what it says. It says that as the Aramean army advanced toward him, Elisha prayed, O Lord, please make them blind. So the Lord struck them, the army, with blindness. And as Elisha had asked, Elisha went out and then told them, you have come the wrong way. This isn't the right city. Follow me and I will take you to the man you are looking for. And he led them to the city of Samaria, aka right smack dab in the middle of the nation of Israel, right in front of the audience of the king. This is too good. As soon as they entered Samaria, Elisha prayed, O Lord, now open their eyes and let them see. And you got to imagine that this army, their eyes open up and they go, oh no. Now they're the ones saying, oh no, right? So the Lord opened their eyes. They discovered that they were in the middle of Samaria. And when the king of Israel saw them, he shouted to Elisha, my father, should I kill them? Should I kill them? He asks twice, as if to say, you better hold me back, because if you tell me, unless you tell me not to, I am going to take these guys out. He is ready. Because that's what we would expect that would happen in this story. That's what we would hope would happen in this story. But God does not always just meet our hopes and our expectations. A lot of times he has hopes and expectations even bigger than that. Look what happens next. Elisha says, of course not. Do we kill prisoners of war? Give them food and drink and send them home again to their master. So the king made a great feast for them and sent them home to their master. And after that, the Aramean raiders stayed far away from the land of Israel. So if God does what we wanted, if God does what we expected, then here's what happens. That Aramean army gets taken out, but the war continues. Instead, if God does what he wants to do, then the war is over and the enemy is humiliated. Can I just tell you something? I really believe that this is a season where we need to get into a point in our lives where we go, hey, listen, God, I got a lot going on. I feel completely surrounded. But you know what? I'm not going to choose to surrender to the enemy that's around me. I'm going to choose to surrender to the fact that I know you have a will that is set on doing things that are for your glory and for my good. That is what we can believe for in this time and in this season. And I don't know what your exact circumstances today, but I know this, that just like God in this story wanted to do something for his glory and the good of Elisha and his servant, he wants to do the same in your life. He's the God that makes it all work out for his glory and for your good. He's done it before. He's done it in my life. If you've been following Jesus for any length of time, I know he's done it in your life, and he's done it all throughout history. He's the God that makes all of this work out, even when we can't see it, even when we can't understand it, and even when we have expectations that maybe are not quite what God really actually wants to do. He's just good like that. And the key to finding victory in your situation is not to continue to try to man up and fight it on your own, but instead, you know what the solution is? The solution is to man down. To be able to surrender not to the forces on all sides of you that are surrounding you, but instead to surrender to the God that is working inside of you. And I would simply say it this way, that we've got to come to a point in our lives where we understand that God is often doing the most when you understand it the least. That's just how God works. That's how good he is. It's at the end of your understanding and at the beginning of your true surrender, that God can do his greatest work. So what's that area in your life right now where you need to let go of your understanding so that God can start doing what only he can do? That brings us to this juncture, to this moment in time. I'm believing that for many of you, this is an opportunity for you to be able to stop and say, God, I surrender this situation to you. Whether you've been following Jesus, again, for 5 seconds, 5 years, 50 years plus, I think we can all take a moment right now and go, hey, God, I surrender this to you. Maybe right now this is your opportunity to actually choose to make Jesus the Lord and Savior of your life and to make that first step of surrender. It's the best decision you're ever going to make. Friend, I don't know where you sit at with God today. But I believe that if you're under the sound of my voice, this is an opportunity for you to make this kind of decision like Elisha made, to be able to say, you know what? I believe that God, you are in control, even when I can't see it, even when I can't feel it, even when I can't understand it. That's what it came down to for Elisha. And because of his decision to surrender, lives were saved and a war was won. In a way that nobody could have expected. And I'm believing that for your life as well. Let's pray. Father, right now in this moment, we surrender all that we are and all that we have to you. The things that surround us, they are real. And the fear for many of us is very real. But God, I believe that you want to put a faith inside of us, that you want to ignite the fire of faith inside of us that says, my God that is at work in me and around me is greater than the things that surround me. And so God, we simply take a moment to surrender all of it to you. And we realize and recognize that sometimes when we understand it the least, you are doing the most. We love you and we thank you. In your holy and precious name, amen.